You're listening to American Workers Radio, a national network promoting American-made products, with your host, Michael Blihash.
Well, welcome once again to another edition of American Workers Radio here on 860 AM. As you know, we serve southeastern Pennsylvania, the state of New Jersey, and northern Delaware on the radio, but you can listen on your phone, on the internet, simply by going to AmericanWorkersRadio.com and click on the Listen Live link, or you can listen to rebroadcasts anytime simply by going to AmericanWorkersRadio.com and click on the Listen Live link. I want to tell you something. Being out with the people is the greatest thing because I hear a lot of opinions, and I'm going to present some of those opinions today because they're very valid, especially for people who've done a lot to make sure that they have worked hard, got an education, job skills, and want to be part of the great American dream. But first, I want to ask that if you got an email this morning, go to your email and send it off to someone else and invite them to tune in. Our very faithful panel members are Mark Andel, the founder of the Made in America store, and you can see all of his information right on the top of the front page of AmericanWorkersRadio.com. I noticed that Mark sent out introducing the K2 product. It's a condiment, and if you go to his site, you'll be able to do that. Just go to the front page of our internet site and click on, and you'll see that product and everything else that Mark is offering there at the Made in America store. And also Larkin Conley. He's a small business advocate, a great SCORE mentor, a man who likes to travel around. He has great opinions. He has his heart and soul in what we are trying to do. And if there were more Larkins and more Riches and more Curtis Ellis's and more Henry's and Rich Logis and everybody else, we would have a much better country and a much better economy. And next is Rich Logis, another gentleman who has got many good opinions, very well known. He is the principal of RJL Technology Integration. And also with us is Henry Chaplinsky, our engineer, and I'm Michael Blihash, always pleased to be with you. I go out to many events during the week and little receptions, and I'll be at two events this coming weekend. One is a big 125th anniversary of St. Joe's at 10th and Liberty Street in Camden, New Jersey. And I already dropped off hundreds of new papers and things like that. So I'll be looking forward to spread the word about all of our good work and invite even more people to get involved with American Workers Radio as we talk about some of the things that we know should be discussed in the major media, but hasn't been discussed. As I stated several times in the past, the national media has been really wasting our time and possibilities to bring attention to all the negative news while we, the American Workers Radio, are trying to bring attention to the good things, the good ideas that we can do to help people get jobs, keep jobs, and of course have stability. These are all common sense issues, as Mark Andel so often says. Well, I just before I introduce our special guest who is with us again, Curtis Ellis is going to share some of his past experiences. And I want to thank Curtis Ellis. As you know, he's a man who's been in the media. He was a senior policy advisor for President Trump. And he is also a person who is the executive director of the American Jobs Alliance. And also, he's been on many broadcasts in the last years and also newspaper articles. I'm really pleased to have his participation along with our panel members. But before I go on, and I'm going to ask everybody to join in with this line of thinking. Going out to the events, people say, Michael, I agree with you. You grow America's economy by getting working age and able-bodied people that are presently low income into job and job training programs so that they have a future and a job, so that they can support themselves and their family and feel good about themselves. You'll also ensure that all Americans have a job that they need so that they, whatever class they're in now, they can go up the ladder of success and become even more productive people. That takes real leadership, and we haven't had that in this country for many, many years. And I'm going to ask our panel to discuss some of these issues. It really takes leadership. It takes elected and business leaders, school boards and parents and taxpayers to speak up, not just keep saying, oh, you can't fight City Hall, you can't fight the big bosses and all. That has to end, and that is ending, and I see it more and more on a national level, and I see it even in the states. They're starting to say, we can't continue to tax businesses out of existence because then they take the back door and they run to the foreign countries, put in their contract, the stuff comes to America, they sell it to the American people, and the American worker is left with zero in hand. Before I get to our panel, Curtis, welcome. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. It's lovely to be here. Thank you so much for having me. Thank you for everything you're doing. It's another beautiful day in paradise.
Mark?
How you doing, Mike? Good morning, all our listeners, Mike and Henry. Yeah, you know, it's been awesome here, Mike. Again, I'd like to remind the people, you can go out with your conscientious choice and buy and made in America. You know, we talk about some detailed things and how complex certain things are, but I'd just like to get back to the point where it's real simple, too, Mike, where you the person, the listener, can just go out. You make so much change with making a choice, even if, you know, last week we talked about LP or different appliances. If you don't buy one and you buy the American one, you're making a big choice and statement with your purchase. So it's always do your part for the listener. You know, just go out and buy Made in America. Mike, I'd like to just real quick talk about, we've got a 700th bus coming to the Made in America store. Do you believe it?
God bless you.
You know, Mike, I never thought we'd have buses, let alone 700.
And every bus that comes in there says, this guy is the best. We got to support him. We got to support all these efforts to bring jobs back to America.
Yeah. You know, with these buses, though, it's the demographic 50 years old to 90, and it's Americans. It's people that built this country, did their part, contributed, and really appreciate what we're doing, but not for us, just because they want to get it back. They love the country. It's their team, you know, and it's nice to see these people always fired up. I just want to, you know, right after this show, I've got one from Pittsburgh, and we'll make sure, we always make sure they know of the radio show. But I just wanted to bring that back because buses, tourism, brings $15,000 economic impact to every city or area. And people don't realize that one bus feeds, you know, they stop at the diner, they go to the hotel, they go to the tourism attractions and whatnot, but they put money in your area. And buses, I've learned a lot about the tourism industry and how much they can help cities and towns grow. So it's great. It's a working model in itself, Mike.
And that's you're absolutely right, Mark. Whenever you see an industry or a business near maybe a medium size or even a small manufacturing, all the local businesses are part of that local economy. And they, if the factory or the distribution center closes, that means all those little shops are going to hurt in the long run,
yeah,
as well.
It's the same process, Mike.
It's the same process.
So,
and the thing is, I'm going to ask Curtis to answer this. Why did the elected officials not pay attention to what we're talking about, looking for the jobs? And instead, they looked for everybody else's best interest in the world and forgot about the American people.
Well, as Mark Twain said, you can't get somebody to understand something they're paid not to understand. These elected officials are being paid through their campaign war chest. Their donors are the global corporations that don't care about the American people, that are more interested in exploiting cheap foreign labor, either on the other side of the world in places like China and Vietnam, or else by importing unlimited, unrestricted, cheap labor through open borders immigration policies. That's who the donors are for these elected officials. At the same time, look where a lot of the members of Congress come from and where their staff comes from. They come from the elite universities. They come from the Ivy League and the high-priced schools. and they tend to think the whole world's just like them. They don't. How many carpenters are there as members of Congress? How many laborers? How many bricklayers? How many plumbers? How many people who work with their hands or have ever even held a job working with their hands will you find in the halls of Congress? Not that many. So they have no understanding of what work really means. They think work is something you do with your head. They think knowledge is something you get out of a book in a classroom. Most knowledge, as we understand, comes from doing. It's know-how. We learn by doing as well as through a book. So you've got this cultural aspect to it, which is these people all come from the same schools, the same class, if you will, and you've got the monetary incentive that they're being paid to look out for the Fortune 50 corporations that are not interested in hiring Americans and paying them decent wages. They've all gone on. They're now too sophisticated for patriotism. The idea of independent nation states are sovereign nations is really an impediment to their smooth functioning, where they can just move assets around the globe like checkers on a checkerboard. And they see people the same way. The Germans, after World War II, the German economic miracle required workers because a lot of German people were killed during the war. So what they did is they invited in so-called guest workers from Turkey. And there's a famous quote by one of the German economists saying about these guest workers. They said, "We wanted workers, but we got people." they were looking at workers as labor inputs, and just simply people who not people, but little entities that would work, produce goods for the German economy, and then go into a state of suspended animation when their shift ended. But what they discovered is they got people with culture, people with families, people with a different religion, people with a different way of looking at the world, people who were not German. And we've got too many people now in Congress and in the upper echelons of the corporate America who don't see workers as people. They see them as a factor on a spreadsheet. And where can we get the cheapest labor? Things like our country, our community, our neighbors, our neighborhood don't figure into this spreadsheet. Things like loyalty, patriotism, giving back to the country that gave you a decent life, that doesn't figure into their spreadsheets. And that's really unfortunate. Starting to change, that's when Donald Trump talks about the flag and the national anthem and our country and patriotism. That's what he's talking about, changing those attitudes, where on both sides of the aisle, unfortunately, there are too many people who look at the world through green eye shades and a profit and loss statement and a ledger book rather than seeing people.
You know, Curtis, you bring up a very interesting point. I think that, I mean, we're so close to the general election at this point, but there will be a big election in 18. I believe that we should urge every local city hall and every township and every county to bring in every elected official to tune their county up to see what they're all about. I'll give you a good, for instance, when there was a political convention in Philadelphia recently, I don't want to mention exactly which one it was, but you can guess who it is. They were invited to go to some of the poorer neighbors in the neighborhoods in the city and in the region outside the city. They said that their schedule didn't permit it. They didn't want the delegates being traveling around in, you know, unfortunate situations or, you know, taking their mood away from what they were there to do. I found that pretty disgusting, to be quite honest. Because I think that if these people went around And many of those delegates are members of the House and the Senate who are at these conventions. I think they should go around and see what's happened to our community as a result of the poor leadership in Washington, D.C. It all starts from the top. You know, you have to build a house from the foundation up. But once you get to the up, you have to make sure the roof is good and all. Well, the people in Washington, they haven't been looking out for the roof. So it's collapsing. The rest of the building is just rotting away. With that, I'm going to ask Rich Loges. How are you doing, Rich?
Hey, guys. Good morning. And Curtis, welcome back. A couple things, Michael. Good morning to you guys real quick. First, I want to wish a happy birthday to one of our most devout and dedicated listeners, Jim Austin. He may not be listening live at the moment, but he always listens to the rebroadcast. And on behalf of everyone at the show, I want to thank you, Jim, for listening and wish you a happy birthday. We really appreciate your patronage and tuning in and letting your friends, family, business associates know about us. And I also want to congratulate Mark for his 700th bus this year, Mark.
Yeah,
what an achievement. I mean, that's just, you know, if you do the math, guys, I mean, we're, I don't know, what is it, about 300 days that we're into the year, give or take. You know, Mark's got a couple buses coming a day. If you think about that. I mean, Mark, you keep this up, you'll be having as many buses daily as Democrats have run Philadelphia, 22,000 straight days. That'd be, excuse me, Michael, 20,000 straight days. There's so many damn Democrat empires in America, I forget how many days they run some of these places. So you guys, Michael, you're 20,000 straight days. So congrats to Mark. Happy birthday to Jim. Welcome to you, Curtis. And I suspect, Michael, that had those delegates walked around Philadelphia, I've got a feeling, but I don't think any of them would have been asked. Secretary Clinton, Congressman Brady, he's the congressman there, right, Michael?
Right.
Robert Brady?
Right.
Yeah. Congressman Brady, did you know that the city of Philadelphia has been run by only Democrat mayors and 90% Democrat city council the last 20,000 consecutive uninterrupted days, which is longer than Stalin ran the Soviet Union and the Castros in Cuba? Oh, I wasn't aware of that, Rich. That's interesting. If you went to the cardiologist and the cardiologist said, we need to clear that arterial blockage, otherwise you're going to have a massive heart attack and die, you wouldn't tell the cardiologist, well, doctor, that's interesting. Interesting fact. That's interesting. That's very interesting, Rich. I'm going to look into that.
No, let's get together in 20,000 days.
You tell them to knock it right. You tell them, cut that thing right out of there. Okay, right out of there, Michael. So that's just part of the larger, you know, this is part of where this is the new political, re-elect no one, Larkin. Re-elect no one. This is a time right now where incumbents, Republican and Democrat, I tell you, Michael, on one hand, I almost pity some of them. Because they're going to be come at by this new brand of politics. See, everyone keeps focusing on the president, Curtis, as an individual, and Donald Trump will be president for a maximum of 8 years. It's the brand of politics that has the two major parties really nervous right now, because they know, especially the GOP establishment, Republicrats, never Trumpers. Country over party. It's funny how much you hear establishment GOP people, Curtis, talk now about country over party. I mean, I never heard that in the 8 years of President Obama. Did you?
No. I haven't heard it from either. Everybody's putting party, not everybody, but yeah, I never heard it. Everybody's putting party over country. That's what the Democrats are doing now. You raise a very good point that in 8 years, President Trump will be off the scene. But what are we left with? This scorched earth attitude that the Democrats are taking, and unfortunately some of the Republicans are taking it too. They're just not as vocal about it. They're sitting on their hands. They're not doing anything to support the president. They're not doing anything to support the agenda that the American people voted for and elected. But the Democrats are taking very vocal, very strident, intransigent opposition. What are they going to get the next time around? They will have diminished the office of presidency, diminished respect for politics, compromise, trying to solve problems. Instead, they're play-acting, making believe and pretending that they're the French resistance in World War II or something. It's absolutely ludicrous. And they're ripping the country apart in the process. A part of it goes back to what I was saying before about the members of Congress all coming from the same class. This personal, as you say, they're opposing President Trump on a very personal basis because his personality, culturally speaking, even though this guy's a billionaire, culturally speaking, he talks and acts like a working class guy. He is a blue-collar billionaire. And the way he talks, the way he uses language, is culturally different than all of these members of the Washington permanent establishment. Look, President Trump went to Wharton School of Economics, very elite school. But when he talks and the way he thinks and the way he behaves is very much like the common man. And that's not acceptable in Washington. You're not allowed to do that. And they keep saying, well, he's really violating all the norms. He's departing from the norms. He's not acting presidential. Who are they to decide what's presidential? It's departing from everything they're used to. But guess what? That's what the American people want, because everything we're used to has driven this country into a ditch. We've got crummy trade deals that outsource our jobs. We have schools that don't teach, and the people who don't have jobs. People can't pay their mortgage. They can't pay their property taxes. We can't support the standard of living that used to be the envy of the world. You know, Donald Trump said during the campaign, said it used to be we made cars in Flint, Michigan, and you couldn't drink the water in Mexico. Now the cars are made in Mexico, and you can't drink the water in Flint. And it's all tied together. When we outsource our industries, outsource our jobs, we're outsourcing the tax base, which supports the water systems, the sewer systems, the roads and the bridges that too many people take for granted or think just descended from heaven. No, we built them. The American taxpayer built them, and the businesses that employed the Americans made it all happen. You can't just outsource all this stuff to China and Mexico and Canada and expect to have a first world country. It doesn't work that way.
You are so, Curtis, you're reminding me of many visits to Mexico, and that is the most unbelievable memory that I have. Everybody says, "Don't drink the water; you'll have Montezuma's revenge and everything else." Very true, but look how people in Washington have allowed us to fall off the roof. And we're down on the ground, and we want to pick ourselves up. Let me tell you something. Americans want to work. They want to have talents. You have to go to job fairs. You have to go into the communities where I go and talk to the people I talk to. Nobody wants to be unemployed. Many of the people can't even imagine how leaders in any field, whether it's in the Washington or local leaders or state leaders, could allow communities to be slowly disbanded. How could they see everything falling apart around them and just continue to want to raise taxes to keep up their expenses at City Hall or in the state capitol? It doesn't make sense. It's time. You're right. It's time for people to get out and be with the general public, to walk through the communities, to shake the hands of the poor. No one wants to be poor. I work in social services. No one calls me up and says to me, "Michael, help me to be poor." No, they do not do that. They say, "Help me so I could get a job. I need a job. My son needs a job. He's a college graduate with no job in 2 years." That's the kind of leader we need in Washington. And you're right. Donald Trump is shaking everybody up. No one voted for a spectacular, you know, personality. They voted for someone who's presenting common sense to the everyday taxpayer of America.
They want change. They want to trust the government again. People want to trust the government and let them make sure they've got our back. And that's what you're talking about. Trump's the wrecking ball for this.
He's the wrecking ball. And believe me, his name will be remembered not because he went and kissed up to all the hierarchy, but because he shook their feathers. And some of them already should be gone. Thank you for your service. Thank you for what you did. Thank you for helping put America in debt. And now it's time for you to go and maybe get more of the people from communities who understand what it's all about to get America back again.
And the same way we need to retire some of these so-called representatives who aren't representing us, but they're representing somebody else or some other interest, maybe we need to retire some of these trade agreements, some of these laws, some of these rules and regulations that are held over from a previous era. Right now, we are, as Donald Trump promised, renegotiating NAFTA. The fourth round of talks just concluded down here in Washington, in the Washington area. So we had representatives from Mexico and Canada here with the U.S. Trade Representative Bob Lighthizer. And one of the proposals on the table was a sunset clause that every 5 years NAFTA would evaporate and we'd have to renegotiate it. And this makes a whole lot of sense because you look what was in NAFTA to begin with. It's, you know, 20, 25 years old now. And when we started it, there were no iPhones. There were no – technology was wildly different. In the course of the 20 years, the amount what happened in those 20 years is the auto industry went to Mexico. It left Michigan and went to Mexico. But what's also happened is – a higher percentage of the cars that are finally sold in the U.S., a higher percentage are made in China than ever were. We set rules in the original NAFTA for how much of the car had to be made in the three countries. And that's changed wildly, but the agreement hasn't changed. I don't know any business that has a contract that is not revisited after 5 years, after a few years. Nobody signs an open-ended contract that never changes. No business does. I mean, your leases expire after so many years. Every business contract expires. And while we're talking about NAFTA, I think it's very important. We always talk about Mexico. I'll admit it, I love to point to Mexico, and we all do, because they have cheaper labor. It's, you know, kind of in many ways a third world or a more backward country. People are paid a dollar an hour there. But the other partner in NAFTA deserves attention too, and that's Canada. We have a lot of good friends, and a lot of American industry is located in Canada. But look, the Canadians are not clean as snow when it comes to taking advantage of the United States. First of all, in this fourth round of talks that just concluded, Canada took the lead in rejecting the sunset proposal and in rejecting the other proposals the Americans made. Canada is guilty of subsidizing its aircraft industry. Bombardier jets are small, not small, but they're short-haul jets used in a lot of routes, let's say, from Buffalo to New York City or from Philadelphia to North Carolina. You're not going to fly a jumbo jet on routes like that. They subsidize their aircraft industry. They subsidize their lumber industry. They subsidize, the Canadians do, they subsidize their dairy industry. This is driving American industries to the brink of bankruptcy. It's driving American workers out of their jobs and out of their homes. So when we do this NAFTA renegotiation and when we think about it and look at it, let's not overlook Canada. Let's not forget that they are engaged in trade practices that would be illegal to do within this country. If the government of North Carolina subsidized one particular Main Street business over another, that would be illegal. But that's what Canada is doing on an international scale. And thank goodness we have Donald Trump in the presidency who said we need to renegotiate these deals. And we have Bob Lighthizer as the U.S. Trade Representative. He worked with President Reagan. He's a hard-headed guy. He understands that we need to put the interests of American workers first in these trade deals. We don't put the abstract concept of the global economy first. See, and that's what's happened, is for too many decades on both sides of the aisle, we had people in these administrations who believed in this abstract concept called the global economy, and we must do what's right for the smooth and efficient operation of the global economy without ever thinking of we need to do what's right that will help the American people. And that's the key difference. And even to this day, there are people around. I mean, look, Donald Trump has started to turn that around where it's now you're not laughed off the stage, which you used to be. Mark my words, I've been fighting this battle for a dozen years. You used to be laughed off the stage if you said, well, we actually need to look out for the American people rather than the global economy. People would say, you don't get it. What are you, some kind of Neanderthal? Nationalism, the nation, America, what's good for America? That's dangerous stuff. You must be kidding. Well, now we're finally starting to turn that around, and we have people like Donald Trump, like U.S. Trade Representative Ambassador Lighthizer, and as we renegotiate NAFTA, we're starting to look at what's good for Americans. And if we're in no shape, if we don't have jobs, and if we don't have a decent economy, we can't help anybody in the world. So if we want to help the world, we got to start by helping ourselves.
Pay attention to your back door first. Very, very important. Well said. Dr. Larkin Conley, how are you doing?
Good morning, Michael and Henry, Rich and Mark. Curtis, welcome back. You certainly have some very provocative remarks to make, some that I'd like to take you to task for, and some that I won't. But at any rate, you make several good points. So many people that I talk to who are politically on the Democratic side, I guess the left, well, let's just call it the left, because I'm tired of Democrats and Republicans, think that NAFTA was a response to the loss of manufacturing jobs in America and closing all the factories. What they don't realize is the age of NAFTA and the fact that NAFTA really was responsible for the loss of the jobs, and it was our play into NAFTA that really created that that problem.
Larkin, have you ever heard that NAFTA was renegotiated at any point?
Well, I understand that it's being renegotiated now.
I know, but since its beginning to date, we haven't had. And what Curtis said, it's right. There is no lease that you put on once and it stays for years. You should renegotiate that every 3 or 4 years and sign it off on the fifth year. That's where our American leaders just kept walking without ever looking back to see what's happening behind them. Yes.
And there's no question on that. I wanted to switch wheels here because I heard a very emotional and moving speech in Philadelphia the other night from a guy who I don't think the word is I've admired, but a guy that I certainly watched and agreed with in many respects for years before I left the Republican Party and the Democratic Party and any party, for my own party, which is the Pragmatic Party, I used to admire John McCain, and I used to call myself a moderate Republican, which is, I think, the label that McCain put on himself. But I sure am kind of mystified at the rhetoric that he's coming up with now, and I think it's created a political dynamic in D.C. unlike anything we've ever seen. I think just Trump being president is a political dynamic that we've never seen before in our lives. But with McCain as a Republican poo-pooing nationalism, poo-pooing it altogether, saying poo-pooing nationalism for our position on the national, on the world scene, Curtis, can you interpret that for me? I mean, I completely missed what he was trying to say. Not only annoyed me, but I thought it certainly wasn't the rhetoric of a fellow party guy who probably as much as anybody in D.C. could influence Trump to do certain things, but seemingly has, because of his lack of popularity, decided he's not going to play that card. I mean, I'm completely lost.
I'm glad you brought that up. I was struck by that as well. He talked about spurious nationalism, and you know, here's a man. He served his country. He served bravely. What did he go to fight for? Did he fight for the global economy when he went in and was shot down over North Vietnam? Was he fighting for universal health care? Now, I have a feeling he was moved by an emotion of patriotism. One thing I'd like to say to this is John McCain, this is not out of his character, by the way, his latest remark, which is really sad. He has become, in the many years he has served in Washington, he has been infected with Potomacitis and Washingtonitis, and he has become a globalist of the first order. And I don't say this lightly. One of his enduring issues, one of his enduring crusades, is he wants to get rid of the Jones Act. The Jones Act is the Shipping Act. It dates back probably to the War of 1812, which requires that cargo carried between American ports, let's say from Baltimore to Savannah or from New York to Philadelphia, be shipped on American boats, American ships. So you don't have Chinese ships serving, you don't have American commerce between American cities dependent on foreign ships. It was a way to ensure the viability of an American shipping industry. This dates back even before the United States. Great Britain had similar laws. Every country on earth, any maritime
power, when they had
power,
sense, Curtis.
Had similar laws because they wanted to encourage, they did not want to become dependent, have their economy dependent on an outside power. The other thing that John McCain is infamous for is there used to be a very strict Buy American requirements in military procurement. The Defense Department wanted to maintain a manufacturing base in this country. So remember, World War II, we were the arsenal of democracy. We were turning out ships and airplanes and machine guns and bullets and barrels and everything at an incredible rate. And we wanted to make sure that we maintained that ability. And so laws were put in place that required when the Pentagon went shopping, they had to buy American goods. The goods, unless they weren't available, and you could get a waiver for it if, you know, look, we want to buy chocolate bars. You don't grow a whole lot of chocolate in America. So, okay, now you want to put chocolate bars in the K ration for the troops. You're going to buy the chocolate from, you know, someplace else. If there's a particular type of metal that's not available from America, okay, you're going to buy it from the Congo or wherever it comes from. But it was very strict, and it was strictly enforced. And you had things called, along with the Buy American, you had military specification. And it was very good stuff. And as a matter of fact, it's why we have a personal computer industry in America. Steve Jobs and Steve Wozniak, when they were building the prototypes of the Apple computer, they went to the military surplus stores in Palo Alto and in Menlo Park, California, where they could buy computer chips, and circuit boards and everything they needed that was all made in America, all made right within 50 miles of the Bay Area for the most part. And they could buy the parts they use to create Apple Computer, now the largest company on earth. Well, John McCain single-handedly championed getting rid of Buy American, and he expanded the waivers, and he has spoken about this on the floor of the Senate many times, that this idea of buying American is outdated. This is this, and this fits right of a piece with his now whining and moaning about spurious nationalism. It, and it's just shocking, and I find it very sad and disappointing.
Michael, can I make a point?
Absolutely.
On that? And you know, and let me just say right off the bat here, to be fair about the point about 2008, John McCain had zero chance to win that election.
Mm-hmm.
And that actually, Curtis, when I look back on that, it had actually less to do with McCain than just what the sentiment in the country was, right?
That's right.
There's the fatigue with the incumbent, you know, with President Bush, and if the Republicans had run a ticket of Jesus Gandhi, the Republicans would have lost. And that's because Democrats and even, you know, some Republicans, conservatives, they jumped on board the train of, you know, let's vote for this person because his race is a qualification and a skill. Right. Race and of course, right. We, you know, common sense people know that race and gender aren't skills. They're accidents. They're not really qualifications. They're just accidents. But that's why John McCain had, you know, he had no chance. I mean, he just had zero chance. And Romney had a little bit of a better chance. But in typical loser GOP fashion, he packed it in with 6 weeks to go. So John McCain, he's just trying to be relevant now, right? He got reelected without even having to get out of bed, and he's there for 6 years, and he's just got to maintain his relevance. I was listening last night to a quote-unquote Republican talking about John McCain being actually an America First, very pro-sovereignty senator. And I'm sitting there laughing, thinking, John McCain has been arguably the singular most influential voice of the GOP when it comes to building up nations that can never be built up, Curtis.
Mm-hmm.
Like we've gone into the, and I'm not going to go into the rehash the history, right? We've gone into many of these Middle Eastern countries, which for thousands of years, believe it or not, longer than the Democrats have run Philly and Chicago, amazingly enough.
Thousands of years.
When it's the year 3047 in the U.S., God willing, this our nation is still afloat, we'll say that the next guy in American Workers Radio, Michael, will say, you know, Michael, the Democrats have run Chicago for the last 4 million consecutive uninterrupted days, thousands of years. That we went into these nations thinking we could build them up. And I understand the intentions were maybe true, and this is not at all a knock against our military, but it doesn't work. Nation building doesn't work. If it had worked, the people in the nations over the last 10,000 years would have figured it out.
So it goes back to a fundamental error that you learn something from a book. Well, we've got the blueprint here for how to run a constitutional democracy. Once we hand out the pamphlets on the corner of Benghazi and Maine, they'll set up a constitutional democracy, a constitutional republic. Well, no, most learning comes from doing. This system evolved over centuries, as you say. And if they don't have centuries of experience in this type of self-government, it ain't going to happen. I'm sorry, go ahead.
Benghazi, Chris Stevens, Ty Woods, Glenn Doherty, Sean Smith. Ah, the Democrats listening didn't think I knew all four people who died, did they? Well, I did know, and we do know. It doesn't work. So please spare me the I'm for America First, Senator McCain, nationalism, please. Because just say what you – see, if John McCain just came out, Curtis, and said, you know what, I'm going to oppose the president because I don't like him, I don't agree with him. Well, he'd be honest about it. Instead, he hides it under the guise of nationalism, all right, of sovereignty. of America First. And the Democrat media industrial complex, Curtis, don't you just love the D-Mike thing I came up with?
Yes.
Cool? It's cool, right? It's cool, right? The D-Mike, see, you notice what they've done with the term nationalism. Is they've done what they always do. They always bring it back to slavery, sexism, or Hitler. When they don't agree, look at anything I'm saying, Michael. Whatever the Dems don't agree with, it generally comes back to slavery, Hitler, and sexism. Maybe all the above.
But you're right, oh, Rich. You know what? As we're talking, I'm thinking, you know, maybe it's because John McCain and all of his peers that have been elected haven't been going into the regular communities of America to see the once great, beautiful manufacturing buildings so alive and well with people now empty and just sitting there. And by the way, why is it that all of these institutions, all of these factories had to move out of America? And now these factories are opened in China and other places, and they're all using the most modern technology that's available to them. They're having the same situation. They need less workers because a lot of stuff is now automated. And so, well, why can't we automate it in America? Bring those cell phones back. Bring all of the production of everything that we use, at least 50% of it. Could you imagine what a difference we would have in America, Mark, if 50% more of the people in your area of Buffalo or Philadelphia had jobs? Wouldn't that be a much better way to live our life and have a future?
Yeah, and when you automate, too, you add 10 guys to every piece of equipment. You still got your programmers, your trainers, your watchdogs. You got to babysit the robots. So there's a lot to that when they say automation takeover or 3D printing. Additive manufacturing is awesome. There's so much coming up, Mike, and again, with the skilled trades push, I'm educating these young guys with us now. We're up to 84 employees. They're going to make six figures, the welders, the machinists. There's no question in my mind because there's such a shortage. So we got to get them schools, the parents and guidance counselors to request and educate these kids in what they could make working with their hands again.
You know, everyone, I sent out an article which appeared in the Wall Street Journal this week. It was Behold the New Emperor of China. And I hope that all of you got that and were able to glance at it, because what it shows is that the people who are leading China are paying attention to the needs of China, its future, and its people. They're bringing jobs to the people. They're bringing them out of the fields and into the industries, and not only industries that are the production line, but all sorts of research and development. There's no reason for any of that not to be taking place in America right now, at least 50% of it. And that's where the problem is. If you read that article, China's going out of its way to get as many new companies as it can located on their borders. And in fact, I also send everyone an article about SEPTA. SEPTA is ordering new cars for their the L in Philadelphia, and they're going to be doing it out of Boston. However, the company is owned by China. China's moving their operation into Boston, Massachusetts, so they can say it's American made. That doesn't make sense to me. Right in the city of Philadelphia, there was Bud on Hunting Park Avenue, and there were several other manufacturers around. They've all been put out of business because they went to other places than America.
So explain to me why, if it's being built by a Chinese-owned company in Boston, they certainly aren't importing the workers. Are they not American workers that are building these cars?
Yes, they are, but they are in command, and Curtis, correct me if I'm wrong, of everything the way it is done and how the specs are going to be. They're coming to America now. Any profit that is made goes to their main company in China. And I would like to see 50% of those cars built in America and the profits stay in America.
One of the things they do, which, look, the Japanese are now building cars in the U.S. because Ronald Reagan put quotas on the number of cars that could be imported. And that's why we have Japanese auto plants in places like Tennessee and Alabama and elsewhere. With these Chinese companies, what they're often doing is the higher levels of management are Chinese. And there's a copper tubing plant in Alabama that's the Washington Post wrote about them some time ago. The line workers are paid, I don't know, $10 an hour. They can maybe get up to $14 an hour if they're lucky. But the managers and the executives of the company are all Chinese, and they're brought in from China. In other countries, when China does projects, they do import wholesale. It's just tens of thousands, an entire workforce from China. Here they're hiring Americans for the shop floor jobs, but the management jobs go to the Chinese. And the other point to make, as with the transplants of the Japanese auto plants, is the key technology, the most advanced technology, whether it's the hybrid transaxle for the hybrid cars, the engines, they're often made in Japan. And so what we have here are assembly plants. So the key technologies would be not American. Look, I'm not begrudging. I'm glad we've got some jobs here, but this is, and I'm glad there's investment in America. And I think the point you're trying to make is, hey, does it matter if it's a foreign company as long as they're investing in America? In the big picture, no, it doesn't matter. That's a good thing. But let's look under the hood and see what's going on. And you find that we have lost the know-how for making the most advanced technology. That's coming in from the home islands of Japan or from Shanghai or the research lab outside of Beijing. And we need to be aware of that. We want America to be the innovation capital as well as the manufacturing capital of the world. Well, at least I want that.
Now, I'm going to take you to task on that, Curtis. I somewhere along the line, this country has to fit into a world economy. That's not going away. That's not going to disappear. And I understand as it stands right now, we're the number one consumers in the world. So all we're doing is buying it. All we're doing is buying it and consuming it. But somewhere along the line, we're going to have to set up these agreements and alliances. I mean, I'm thrilled if that car is being assembled and we're putting people to work in Boston. And I think we're just looking to bitch about something if in fact we're complaining that they're not being made in America. I'm just kind of confused. That's all.
I agree with you. No, absolutely. We're a trading nation, always have been, and always should be. And I think we agree that we should be more than consumers. That's all. But the Washington policymakers for the last 50 years or so, or 70 years since the end of World War II, said we're going to use our consumer market as a tool of geopolitics. And we will be consumers for goods made elsewhere so that those countries can build up their economies and become our allies. And that's fine. It works spectacularly well. It's just time to rebalance it. Just like it's time to renegotiate NAFTA, it's time to rebalance some of these agreements. I'm very happy that China is building plants here, that Japan is building plants here. We have to just be cognizant of what's going on in those plants. I'm glad we're having assembly plants here. I'd like to see GM and have a native auto industry and like Tesla or Musk or whatever developing the next generation of automobiles. I think it's I don't begrudge anybody a job. I don't begrudge any investment from overseas. It should be happening here. We need to have the tax and trade and regulatory and energy reform that makes this the best place on earth to live, to earn a living, to work, to do business. And we shouldn't discourage the importation of sub-assemblies made elsewhere. But at the same time that we don't discourage the import of sub-assemblies made elsewhere, we want to encourage the innovation and the creation of those subassemblies here, which can then be exported to the rest of the world.
You know, I want to just add one thing because our time is getting short, but here is where the difficulty with these kind of articles comes about. 25 years passed, and we have a limited amount of companies that are able to manufacture and also repair the train cars. That's very unfortunate. And here, after 25 years, we had 25 years to build it in America. A Chinese company is now coming in. Instead of them sending in, shipping over what they make there, they're going to make it here so it has the Made in America label. This is the thing that's very unfortunate. When Bud left, it did not grow anymore. It just allowed the contracts be sent around the world, and they were picked up quite easily. And you go into any of the subway cars in New York or whatever, they're foreign made. We live in America. Don't we have people that could make subway cars?
And Bombardier makes the subway cars in New York, and they bid to make subway cars in Chicago, and I believe that Rahm Emanuel, Mayor Emanuel, decided to go with the Chinese company instead. And between the two, I'd rather Bombardier, their Canadian company. But look under the hood, and you might find some hidden subsidies in there that Bombardier grew up and captured the market for rail cars because they were being subsidized in one way or another by the Canadian government, and that allowed them to grab market share and put the company in Philadelphia out of business. I can't state that as a fact, but I wouldn't be surprised if that's what happened, because that's what the Chinese have done. That's what every country's done. That's how America did it, in fact.
Ladies and gentlemen, as you can hear by the music in the background, I have to say thank you, Curtis Ellis, for being with us again. And we're looking forward to hearing from you again very shortly. Thank you, Larkin Connolly. Thank you, Rich Logis and Mark Andel, Henry Chaplinsky. Until this Saturday at 11 or next Wednesday at 11, thank you. Please do check out the bottom of our site, because November is American Made Month, and we need all of you to get out there and promote American workers and the businesses that employ them. Thank you. Have a great one. Until we meet in my travels or on the radio, best wishes to you and yours.
Thanks, Curtis.
Thanks, Curtis. Have a great week, guys. Bye, American.